The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight, with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening. This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Everybody sing.
Maybe it's the movies, maybe it's the books, maybe it's the bullets, maybe it's the real crooks, maybe it's the drugs, maybe it's the parents, maybe it's the colors everybody's wearing, maybe it's the president, maybe it's the last one, maybe it's the one before that, what he done, maybe it's the high schools, maybe it's the teachers, maybe it's the tattooed children in the bleachers, maybe it's the Bible, maybe it's the lack, maybe it's the music, maybe it's the crack, maybe it's the hairdos, maybe it's the TV, maybe it's the cigarettes, maybe it's the family, maybe it's fast food, maybe it's the news, maybe it's divorce, maybe it's abuse, maybe it's the lawyers, maybe it's the prisons, maybe it's the senators, maybe it's the system, maybe it's the fathers, maybe it's the sons, maybe it's the sisters, maybe it's the moms, maybe it's the radio, maybe it's road rage, maybe El Nino, or UV rays, maybe it's the army, maybe it's the liquor, maybe it's the papers, maybe the militia, maybe it's the athletes, maybe it's the ads, maybe it's the sports fans, maybe it's a fad, maybe it's the magazines, maybe it's the internet, maybe it's the lottery, maybe it's the immigrants, maybe it's taxes, big business, maybe it's the KKK and the skinheads, maybe it's the communists, maybe it's the Catholics, maybe it's the hippies, maybe it's the addicts, maybe it's the art, maybe it's the sex, maybe it's the homeless, maybe it's the banks, maybe it's the clear cut, maybe it's the ozone, maybe it's the chemicals, maybe it's the car phone, maybe it's the fertilizer, maybe it's the nose rings, maybe it's the ends, but I know one thing, if it were up to me, I'd take away the guns, I'd take away the guns, I'd take away the guns.
Yep, so would I. Her name is Cheryl Wheeler. If you haven't heard this song before, then you must be new to the program, because I tend to whip it out, as it were, every time there's a another mass shooting. And I didn't do it yesterday. There were two shootings yesterday that were both sort of relegated to the background because there was so much other news going on. But when I found out this morning there was yet another mass shooting, that would be three in a 24-hour period, I thought it was time for a Cheryl Wheeler song again, because I tend to, again, start the show with this song when there's another mass killing. So, two shootings yesterday. The first one in Middleton, Wisconsin. A man opened fire at an office park. A few hours later, in Masontown, Pennsylvania, in a municipal building. Here's the report that was on the NBC Nightly News.
Let's turn now to those shooting rampages in two different states today. The first in Wisconsin, a man opening fire at an office building, his co-workers running and hiding for their lives. And then just hours later, another shooting rampage, this one at a judge's office in Pennsylvania. We have it all covered, first to Wisconsin and NBC's Blake McCoy.
Screams of anguish as workers fled this Middleton, Wisconsin office park.
Shut fire, shut fire.
unsure of where shots were coming from or who was being targeted.
We had no clue, you know, in hearing the gunshots. It was scary.
Marlene Meckham put her workplace on lockdown as first responders moved in.
When they evacuated us, we came through the back stairwell, which there was blood on the ground.
Officers quickly zeroed in on WTS Paradigm, a software company. Authorities say the shooter was an employee, wounding three colleagues before police shot and killed him.
Subject is down. We need a shield up here so we can approach.
The suspect was heavily armed with a lot of extra ammunition, a lot of extra magazines.
Tonight, no motive, but praise for officers whose four-minute response time is credited with saving lives. Blake McCoy, NBC News, Middleton, Wisconsin.
And the other one.
I'm Kristen Dahlgren. It was around 2 o'clock when gunshots exploded through Masontown, Pennsylvania.
We got an officer hit.
Chaos erupting in the municipal building after authorities say a man who was scheduled for a hearing on domestic violence ran in, gun blazing.
So I jumped on a foot.
As bystanders ducked, witnesses say the shooter appeared to be chasing a woman.
I think he wanted her.
Four people were injured. Eric Randolph was in the courtroom when the shooter entered.
The gentleman comes in, sweeps the room with the gun, and it ends up being on me. And all I'm doing is staring at this gun, staring at him, and praying, dear God, don't let this be my day.
Randolph says the gunman then walked out, and officials say he was killed in an exchange of gunfire with police. One officer shot in the hand is expected to recover. First responders tonight being called heroes as another small town comes to grips with a mass shooting. Kristen Dahlgren, NBC News.
So that was yesterday, a doubleheader of mass shootings, and you know, it's almost like this is the new normal in America these days. These things just happen because of our freedoms here. Yes. But then this morning, when I watching the news and I see that there's another one. Authorities responded about 9 o'clock this morning to the scene of a shooting in Aberdeen, Maryland. Multiple people were shot inside a Rite Aid distribution center. Early reports say the female shooter, yep, a woman, killed three people, though that number could change. The gunman is a woman, the gunwoman, I guess, is in custody and in critical condition.
Seeing some live pictures, I'm seeing them for the first time from WJZ out of Baltimore. This is in Aberdeen, Maryland. The sheriff in Harford County, Maryland, says that a mass shooting has left, and this is according to the sheriff, multiple victims. Hey. Initial reports right now are indicating that five people have been shot, three of them fatally. This is unfolding in the city of Aberdeen. It's about 30, 35 miles north of Baltimore.
Yeah. So that's the situation. It's still an active crime scene. This shit has got to stop. I don't know about you, but I'm just nauseated by it. And the fact is, these three shootings, any one of which could have been the lead story on any nightly network newscast, now bunched together and sort of pushed off to the side because we've got other news happening. You know, the drama that is Washington, D.C. these days, the Trump administration, and the Kavanaugh Supreme Court nomination. Let's just launch into the news because there's so much more to talk about. I guess we can talk about activism, and protesters are out in force today at the Senate office buildings sharing their Me Too stories. MSNBC has more.
I am a veteran.
I am a veteran.
And my Me Too moment was when I was serving in the United States Navy.
My Me Too moment was when I was serving in the United States Navy.
Initially, I was angry that it happened. And I told a bunch of people who didn't care. Most of them were men.
That is a look just in outside Senator Chuck Grassley's office just within the last couple of minutes over on Capitol Hill. Dozens of protesters gathering to share their Me Too stories. Grassley, of course, is the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, and he's given the woman accusing Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexual assault decades ago, Christine Blasey Ford, until 10 a.m. tomorrow to say whether she will testify Monday or not. I want to go back to Casey Hunt, who was on Capitol Hill. Casey, it's interesting because we had talked, I think, earlier in the week about the idea, and Anna Palmer from Politico had heard from some of her sources, the protests would pick up given this allegation against Brett Kavanaugh. And it seems as though that is what we're starting to see on the Hill.
Well, Hallie, look, we've seen a lot of protests on a lot of issues, people yelling and chanting. This one feels different. And I think as you saw the soundbite that you just played, of these women who've come from all across the country, who are not simply, you know, chanting or saying that they are opposed to Kavanaugh, but rather they have come to actually publicly tell, and several of them have said it's for the first time, stories that they've had that seem similar to what Dr. Christine Blasey Ford has said that she has been through. And this sort of groundswell show of support, I think, you know, is the kind of emotional moment that does potentially contribute to how this plays out overall. Because as we talked about a little bit earlier in your show, we still don't know if Dr. Ford's going to testify, but she hasn't ruled it out. And in this kind of a back and forth where essentially it's turning into a battle of credibility, a question of who do you believe and why, this kind of moment can actually play a pretty significant role in that. So these protesters have a vigil planned for 1 o'clock, a press conference planned for 4:30, and we'll keep you posted on their movements here through the day.
So busy day on Capitol Hill as protesters are making their voices known. Democrats certainly are as well. As of this morning, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, the woman accusing Brett Kavanaugh of sexual assault, still has not decided whether or not to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee on Monday. The 11 Republican men, only men, on the committee had issued an ultimatum, basically saying testify before the committee or its staff on Monday, or we'll move forward with a plan to put Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court for life. Chris Hayes covered this last night on MSNBC.
In fact, they're not even giving Dr. Blasey Ford until Monday. In a letter today, the top Republican of the committee, Chuck Grassley, said that her prepared testimony and biography are due to the committee by 10 a.m. on Friday, September 21st, if she intends to testify on Monday.
That's tomorrow.
Last night, through her lawyer, Dr. Blasey Ford requested that the FBI investigate her allegation before she told her story to the committee. And tonight, she is refusing to back down. In a new statement, her lawyer reiterated the call for a full investigation and said that at the very least, multiple witnesses should be included in any proceeding.
Yep.
Attorney Lisa Banks adding the committee is not conducting a fair or good faith investigation and that the rush to a hearing is unnecessary and contrary to the committee discovering the truth. In their rush to confirm Kavanaugh, who categorically denies the allegation, Senate Republicans are ruling out either an outside investigation or testimony from anyone besides Kavanaugh and his accuser.
Unbelievable.
And they are suggesting Dr. Blasey Ford's requests are unfair.
I think it's not fair to Judge Kavanaugh for her not to come forward and testify. Both of them need to testify under oath next Monday before the Judiciary Committee.
Oh, shut up, you hypocrite. Sorry, that was Senator Susan Collins, a hypocrite. One of Ford's objections is that the Republicans are refusing to seek testimony from Mark Judge, who Dr. Ford says was an eyewitness to the assault. Judge has claimed that he has no recollection of the incident, perhaps because he was always blind drunk. He even wrote a book about it. But he uncategorically does not want to testify. Or said he will not testify. He can still be subpoenaed, you know. Anita Hill, who was treated horribly by the same committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, after she accused Clarence Thomas of sexual misconduct back in 1991, suggested that she's seeing a similar scenario happening now, 27 years later.
Moving forward on this at this pace, with this kind of sort of black hole of a process being foreseen by many of us, we are really under the impression that the Senate doesn't take this seriously and doesn't see this as part of their core responsibility.
And she said that the FBI should investigate Ford's claims.
The hearing questions need to have a frame, and the investigation is the best frame for that, a neutral investigation that can pull together the facts, create a record so that the senators can draw on the information they receive to develop their questions.
Hello. That's how these things are supposed to work. And if they weren't so worried, they being the Republicans, if they weren't so worried about getting this all done before the midterm elections, you know, there would be no rush. But there is a rush, because they want it done before the midterms. On his way to visit the Carolinas yesterday to survey Florence damage, Donald Trump claimed that that's not what the FBI does. He doesn't know what the FBI does.
Well, it would seem that the FBI really doesn't do that.
They've
investigated. They've investigated about six times before, and it seems that they don't do that.
That isn't true.
Thank you, Chris.
In fact,
Hayes.
As Senator Ed Markey notes, in 1991, the White House directed the FBI to conduct a full, thorough, and expeditious investigation into Anita Hill's allegations against Clarence Thomas. The investigation was completed in 3 days.
Yeah, as Robert Hill in the chat room says, they don't want information. They've already made up their minds to screw us all. Of course. Senator Claire McCaskill, who faces a tough re-election bid in Missouri, announced that she's opposing Kavanaugh's nomination. She said her decision is based on the judge's support for unlimited campaign contributions. A group of former prosecutors and attorneys general turned U.S. senators wrote and sent a letter to the White House yesterday urging Trump to reopen the FBI background check investigation into Kavanaugh. Signing the letter were Amy Klobuchar, Patrick Leahy, Richard Blumenthal, Tom Udall, Kamala Harris, Sheldon Whitehouse, Doug Jones, hello, and Catherine Cortez Mastro. Now, there is some breaking news just in the last hour or so. The New York Times has an article. The headline reads, Kavanaugh accuser opens negotiations on testimony next week. Here's what it says. The woman who has accused Judge Brett M. Kavanaugh of sexual assault in an apparent bid to jumpstart negotiations has told the Senate Judiciary Committee that she, quote, would be prepared to testify next week, so long as senators offer, quote, terms that are fair and which ensure her safety. This according to an email her lawyer sent to committee staff members. In the email obtained by the New York Times, the lawyer for Christine Blasey Ford said that testifying Monday, that's the timetable Republicans have set for a hearing, quote, is not possible. And the committee's insistence that it occur then is arbitrary in any event, end quote. The lawyer reiterated that is Dr. Blasey's strong preference that a, quote, full investigation occur before her testimony, wording that stopped short of demanding an FBI probe and suggested she is open to testifying without one. Dr. Blasey has accused Judge Kavanaugh, Trump's Supreme Court nominee, of sexually assaulting her when the two were in high school at a gathering of teenagers in Montgomery County, Maryland. Judge Kavanaugh has categorically denied the allegation and has said he would be willing to testify. In the email addressed to top Republican and Democratic aides on the committee, the lawyer, Deborah Katz, wrote that she would like to set up a call later today to, quote, discuss the conditions under which Dr. Blasey would be prepared to testify. Quote, as you are aware, she has been receiving death threats, which have been reported to the FBI, and she and her family have been forced out of their home, the email said. She wishes to testify, provided that we can agree on terms that are fair and which ensure her safety. Stay tuned. Ah, and there's more news yet. So today marks the one-year anniversary of Hurricane Maria hitting and devastating Puerto Rico. Demonstrators are planning an event outside Trump's Mar-a-Lago property in Palm Beach this weekend. Puerto Rico Governor Ricardo Rosselló was on CNN this morning.
What is the number one thing Puerto Ricans need from the Trump administration right now, given this stark reality?
I think a few things. Number one, eliminate the excess bureaucracy. You know, FEMA has imposed certain processes in Puerto Rico that are not imposed in other states.
Yep.
And the main, you know, the reason why this happens is that Puerto Ricans are treated as second-class citizens. You know, we're a territory of the United States. We're not a full state. And it's about time that we have this discussion. If you are, you know, empathetic about the treatment that Puerto Ricans have received, that, you know, U.S. citizens have received in Puerto Rico, then we need to deep dive into the main root cause of the problem, which is colonial territory in the 21st century.
Wow. Yeah.
So my petition to all decision makers is to have a firm position on this, to let everybody know if they stand with Puerto Ricans to have equal rights to
right.
transition into statehood, which is what the people have asked, or if they're going to support this undemocratic form of colonialism moving forward. I think it is important also to cover the progress. So you mentioned 9% unemployment rate.
Right.
I know it seems high in the United States, but that is the lowest unemployment rate we've had in the history of Puerto Rico. It typically
wow.
hovers around 12 to 14%. The past 7 months have been a steady incline. Tourism is coming back. Crime rates have gone down. So
right.
while there are many challenges,
right.
and I'm not shying away from them, there's also a lot of reason to cover the progress.
And I know you're focused on the present and the future, but I do have to ask you, is there any doubt in your mind that those 3,000 Puerto Ricans, those 3,000 Americans lost their lives as a result of this storm?
No, there isn't. Look, my formal training is as a scientist. So I very much value science and well-done science at that. Once the aftermath of the storm came over here, we had a very unsatisfying protocol to get to the death toll number. Once we realized that, we looked for an independent study. George Washington stepped in, and they took their time. I evaluated everything that they did, and it is my view that it was a very well done estimate of the death toll numbers. Of course, at this juncture, we can talk about estimates, but certainly it's in the ballpark, and that's why I have taken it upon myself to take that number, the 2,975 excess death number, as the official toll in Puerto Rico.
There you go. Ricardo Rosello, the governor of Puerto Rico, speaking on CNN last night, or this morning, actually. Trump was in the Carolinas yesterday, ostensibly to survey the damage from Hurricane Florence. While talking with homeowners in New Bern, North Carolina, Trump noticed a yacht that had washed up in a backyard. According to the pool report, he said to the homeowner, "Is this your boat?" The owner said no. Trump turned and replied with a smile, "At least you got a nice boat out of the deal." Oh, my God. Just let that marinate for a second there. Following South Korean President Moon's trip to North Korea to meet with Kim Jong-un, the Trump administration says the U.S. is ready to resume talks with North Korea, seeking denuclearization by 2021. NBC News had the report.
Kim Jong-un pulled out all the stops to welcome South Korean President Moon Jae-in to North Korea with cheering crowds, an intimate lunch, and one of those famous, highly choreographed North Korean stadium shows. All for this. Today, both leaders promising to ease tensions, and Kim Jong-un promising to scale back his nuclear weapons program, to turn the Korean Peninsula into a land of peace without nuclear weapons and nuclear threats, Kim said. Kim agreeing to close his main missile testing facility and saying he'll close his biggest nuclear complex if the U.S. takes corresponding measures. North and South Korea also agreed to create a no-fly zone on their border.
Over those mountains there, you can see into North Korea there.
Meaning U.S. Air Force flights, like this one we recently joined, are, in principle, now no longer allowed.
Prior to becoming president, it looked like we were going to war with North Korea, and now we have a lot of progress.
But North Korea has so far done nothing to get rid of the nuclear bombs it already has. And U.S. intelligence officials have told NBC News they believe North Korea is still making nuclear weapons.
Despite that, Kim is planning to go to Seoul soon, and North and South Korea even say they will make a joint bid for the Olympics. So he's getting a lot, and so far, still keeping his nuclear weapons.
And that's the operative part there, still keeping his nuclear weapons. Trump got played. Stay tuned. We'll see what happens. And that's a bit of what's news for now. So, all right. Lately, I've taken to starting the show at the top of the 3 o'clock hour, 6 o'clock for the replay with a comedy bit to lighten the load a little bit because everything is so damn serious and scary, just frighteningly terrifying. Obviously, we didn't do that today because I had to play Cheryl Wheeler if it were up to me because of the 3 mass shootings in the last 24 hours. So we have a few minutes before Howie Klein comes on. I can either play Brad and Desi's Green News Report or we can do the comedy here. I'll just call an audible and do the comedy here. We can always listen to the Green News Report later or tomorrow, right? But Colbert, well, he weighed in last night on this Kavanaugh story.
News? I can't leave you alone for 5 minutes. I leave town to go to the Emmys, and the last words out of my mouth are, "Don't break anything." I come back, look at this place. When I left, it looked like smooth sailing for the Senate confirmation of Supreme Court nominee and judge full of dread, Brett Kavanaugh. Last week, we found out that a woman had written an anonymous letter to Senator Dianne Feinstein accusing Kavanaugh of sexually assaulting her at a party when they were in high school. It's a horrifying story and a serious accusation. But Republicans were ready to dismiss it until the woman came forward over the weekend. Her name is Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, and she's willing to testify under one condition, that the FBI investigates the charges before there's a Senate hearing. Seems reasonable, but that was rejected by Chairman of the Judiciary Committee and man who's got a real zinger for the lady nurse today, Chuck Grassley, who says there's no need for the FBI to investigate the Kavanaugh allegation. Oh, so the hearing comes before the investigation. Just like on the classic TV show, Order and Law. Yes, Order and Law.
Oh, yeah.
Executive produced by Wolf Dick.
It's Dick Wolf. Get it? Wolf Dick? Yeah.
And Grassley's not alone. Trump also doesn't believe this is a job for law enforcement.
Well, it would seem that the FBI really doesn't do that.
Yeah. The FBI doesn't have time to investigate sexual assault. That takes precious time away from finding real criminals like the author of the anonymous op-ed.
Ooh.
Stop him before he ops again. Mm-hmm. Show me the precedent. Someone show me the precedent for the FBI investigating sexual misconduct claims against a Supreme Court nominee.
The first I learned of the allegations by Professor Anita Hill was on September 25th, 1991, when the FBI came to my home to investigate her allegations.
All right. I guess all Dr. Blasey Ford's asking is that Congress treat her with the same respect and dignity they gave Anita Hill. The bar could not be lower
if you
dropped it in the Marianas Trench. Now, Kavanaugh has categorically denied the allegations against him, and one of his most ardent defenders is Senator Grassley, who released a letter in which 65 women from Kavanaugh's high school days attested to his integrity. First off, what teenage boy knows 65 women? I'm 54, and I know, like, five. There's my wife. Anna Kendrick was on the show last week. Does the lady on the Raisin Box count? Because I think about her a lot. After the accusations came out, when Politico tried to follow up with these 65 women, five of them declined to comment, and dozens of others either did not respond or could not be reached. Five declined, dozens couldn't be reached, 12 were getting on elevators, seven of them were driving into tunnels, and another five suddenly, no habla inglés. Even if Kavanaugh is guilty, Grassley says, it's not that big a deal.
You understand, we're talking about 35 years ago. I'd hate to have somebody ask me what I did 35 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, who knows what kind of youthful hijinks Grassley was up to when he was a 49-year-old senator. Another staunch Kavanaugh defender is Utah Senator and murderous puppet Orrin Hatch. Hatch doesn't believe it happened, not that he's calling anyone a liar.
Do you think that this in any way is going to derail his nomination?
No. He's a straight-shooting, honest guy. I think when people listen to him, they'll know that he's all right.
And do you think that any of these claims are legitimate?
No, I don't. I think this woman, whoever she is mixed up.
Yeah,
she's mixed up. You know that thing where you remember being the victim of a violent sexual assault and you remember that there was a witness there and you talk to your therapist and your husband and before the guy's a nominee, you write a letter to your congresswoman describing the attack and she forwards it to your senator. You take and pass a lie detector test and then later it turns out your glasses were on the kitchen counter. It's just a mix-up. Just totally mixed up.
Okay.
Wow. Then there's the spokesperson from the Judicial Crisis Network who equated this assault to rough horseplay, which raises the question, what has Brett Kavanaugh done to horses?
Can't help my horse.
All of these defenses are part of the GOP's attempt to have it both ways. He didn't do it, and if he did, it doesn't matter. Because, as one anonymous lawyer close to the White House put it, if somebody can be brought down by accusations like this, then you, me, every man certainly should be worried. No.
No.
No, they shouldn't. Not every man goes through a sexual assault or phase.
Hello.
That's doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen.
Nope.
And to anyone out there who's saying boys would be boys, you should not be allowed to raise boys.
There you go.
Or girls.
Hello.
Maybe a plant. Maybe a plant. We'll talk. A cactus.
Not even. And there you go, a bit of Stephen Colbert to make us laugh, because laughter is important. Also, so are things that are unrelated to the news and to Donald Trump to keep us healthy. We need to expand our horizons. And so I'm encouraging reading. I have opened the Nicole Sandler Show bookstore. It's there on the website at NicoleSandler.com. You see on the menu bar, in fact, let me pull it up so I can say it the right way. And of course, I'm on the wrong page. Hello. I guess it would help if I just go there. So there's the logo across the top, and then below it says Home, Nicole Sandler Show, the Nicole Sandler Show bookstore. You click on that, and it brings you to a listing of a bunch of books that I have. Some of the authors I've interviewed, some I have not, but all have been pitched to me for the show. Anyway, what I'm offering them for is for sale for a contribution, a minimum contribution of $10 per book. That'll cover the shipping expenses and leave a little leftover for a donation to our cause here. So look at the list. I'll be adding more this weekend. I've got another whole stack of books to add to the list. So keep checking back, okay? And read. Take your mind off of Trump for a while, okay? Okay. All right, it is Thursday. You know what that means? Howie Klein's here.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, yes, it is that time of the week. We turn to our friend Howie Klein, who resides and blogs at DownWithTyranny.com and runs the Blue America Pack along with Digby and Crooks and Liars' John Amato. Hello, Howie Klein.
Hello. When we spoke earlier today, I was a little depressed, you remember?
Yes.
I am overjoyed right now.
Really? Good. I like good news. Can you share?
I can.
Okay.
Today there was a rush of money into the Blue America Pack. When I say a rush of money, I haven't counted it yet. I mean, haven't counted it at all. But it looks like it's something in the realm of $50,000.
Wow.
Right to our candidates. Like, all these candidates are flipping out. They can't believe it. They're calling me and saying, what happened? What happened?
Was this from a number of people?
Or just, that made my day.
Was this an influx of donations from a bunch of people or just one person who got very generous?
It was a combination of a couple of very generous people and lots of small donations.
Wow. Well, that's nice.
But, that's why I haven't been able to count it all yet. But it's definitely over $50,000, but it was like a huge amount of money spread out among, including candidates who, so not just like the big candidates who get a lot of money like Randy Bice,
mm-hmm.
but also some of the candidates in really, really tough races where people don't want to take a chance. They wound up getting, thousands of dollars. Like, for example, Kendra Forshay in mm-hmm. West Virginia, who's having a tough time. But just got like a huge amount of money. And she is, she wrote to me, she can't believe what just happened.
Wow.
Because it's more than she would make it normally, which she'd be able to bring in from hours and hours and days on the phone calling people, randomly and asking them for money.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's what candidates wind up doing for the most part. In fact, if you work with the DCCC on your campaign, if you're,
a quote, moderate enough. That's a code word for Republican enough. And the DCCC backs your candidacy. They will work with you, in other words, set up quotas for how much money you have to raise to keep your campaign going, right?
Right. And if you, if you know, so when they criticize people, one of the first things they say, oh, he or she isn't spending enough time on the phones,
wow,
meaning calling people and begging for money.
Yep.
And they, if you, if I don't know the exact number of hours, but they expect, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours a day on the phone and just calling and calling. And it's just a deadly, horrible job to do because, you know, I mean, I guess some people like it. I haven't met any. But, you know, what a horrible thing, calling up strangers and asking them for money.
Yeah, well, that's why the DCCC and the DNC, they love the independently wealthy candidates who can self-fund, because you can put as much of your own money into a campaign as you want. Is that right?
That is right.
Yeah. And so, you know.
There's never enough money. No matter how much you have, they need more. What I'm noticing this year is even candidates who are raising really a lot of money, like, you know, thousands of, over $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, say you raise $2 million for your campaign, your opponent raises, say the same thing,
mm-hmm,
and then in Paul Ryan with his super PAC and puts in $3 million. So you've raised, you know, considerable money with a lot of work, and you know, all of a sudden there's a huge onslaught of Republican money coming in to smear you.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and that's what's happening. In every district.
Right. Now, the reason they need to raise so much money, the thing that's most expensive in running a campaign, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm just, this is off the top of my head, I would think are television ads that eats up so much of the campaign coffers, but also makes a nice, tidy fortune for all the political consultants who are involved in the campaign, too, right?
That's exactly right. And these television ads are necessary. People don't want to do, and radio, television, so broadcast ads are very, very expensive. And they're necessary, and people are afraid not to do it, although, you know, some of these campaigns are saying, hey, it's more effective to cut back on some of that and put in online advertising.
Mm-hmm.
They're finding field operations is even better, you know, where you're actually touching individuals who are likely to vote.
Yep.
You know, people are doing it in different ways, but when you have an onslaught of negative advertising over and over and over again from Paul Ryan's PAC, which is just spending on this week they spent $1.5 million. Smearing Randy Bryce.
Wow.
And what are you going to do? You have to answer them. Yeah. You can't just leave it hanging out there. So they're being forced into spending money that they would rather not spend, or they would rather spend in more productive ways than defending themselves.
Sure. You have a piece up at Down With Tyranny. It was published yesterday. It's titled, "The GOP's Only Path to Victory, Flood the Airwaves with Negative Ads So People Get Disgusted and Don't Vote." That's, I guess I am seeing a lot of Republican negative ads like that. I'm not seeing so many of from the Democrats, though.
There's some. They're doing it selectively.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I saw one that I really liked in Maine, that was in Maine, where they gave back what they got. I mean, but, you know, a lot of these Republican ads are really foolish. Like in Maine, what they were doing is saying, we've talked about this in a general way, but they're saying that Jared Golden, this really, really good candidate in Maine's 2nd District, is saying basically he's not fit to be our congressman because he has tattoos.
Oh, God.
And the fact of the matter is that, yes, Jared does have tattoos. And you know what? He was serving as a Marine on the front lines, so not someone in a back room somewhere, but on the front lines fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq. In his unit, people were killed, and when they left, they all decided they were going to get the same tattoo.
Hmm.
So everybody who was still alive from that experience got the same tattoo. While he was fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, not that I necessarily agree with the policy, but you know these guys who do it are pretty much trying to defend the country, whether they agree with the policies or not. and it, you know, it's people die around you.
Mm-hmm.
And while he was doing that, his Republican opponent was working on Wall Street, stealing money from workers' pensions.
Oh God!
And then they're criticizing Jared. You know, they don't want to discuss health care. They don't want to discuss education. They don't want to discuss jobs. They don't want to discuss infrastructure. They want to talk about Jared's tattoos. So that backfired in his face. The DCCC, so they're advertising about Jared's tattoos. The DCCC did an ad that just ripped this guy apart, Bruce Poliquin, mostly talking about how, you know, showing record of this guy taking money from Big Pharma.
Right.
And then voting for their bills, taking money from Wall Street and then voting for their bills. I mean, that's what his entire congressional campaign is. So the D-Trip did a good job on that one.
So is that the ad that you have embedded in that article, the ad for Jared, or is that one that Jared did?
That's Jared's own ad that I have. The ad that I'm talking about is going up tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
I have a story specifically about advertising and about this topic that we're talking about. I mean, what the Republicans are trying to do is, you know, and before I get to what they're trying to do,
uh-huh.
You know, so sometimes the candidates do it themselves. They do their own responses.
Right.
Jared's was more of a positive ad, if I remember correctly. It was just about what he's trying to do
rather
than
what Huckman
is doing.
Let me play it so people
you
can.
Play it now?
Sure. Yeah, I'll play it. It's only 30 seconds, and this is what.
And then we'll get back. I'll explain what their goal is in terms of independent voters and how they accomplish that.
Okay, so this is the ad for Jared Golden, who's running for Congress from Maine.
Healthcare. Wherever you turn, it seems impossible to find good care that you can afford. Bruce Poliquin is making it worse. Poliquin voted to gut protections for pre-existing conditions, increase premiums, and supported cutting $700 billion from Medicare.
I'm Jared Golden, and when I came home from Iraq, it was important to me to have good health care. I approve this message because together we can take on career politicians, drug and insurance companies to make good health care affordable for everyone.
So he dissed him a little
that
bit.
That was a pretty negative ad against politics.
But it turned out positive at the end. It wasn't all, you know, this guy's bad, 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 and paid for by such and such, which I've seen a few of those.
Right. Well, it was basically a compare. It was a negative ad, but it was a compare ad based on, you know, not someone's physical features or that he was in a college band or anything like that.
Right.
I mean, that's what the Republicans are resorting to, but it was based on issues at least.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, so when the Republicans are talking about somebody's tattoos, Jared is talking about this guy's danger to healthcare, which is true and very provable. So, you know, but most of Jared's ads that I've seen are ads, you know, about what he wants to do for the people who live in that district.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he talks about the positive stuff that he's trying to do. Okay. What the Republicans are trying to do with their smear ads, the really disgusting ads that just are, like I said, very, very personal, and criticizing individuals who are running and not really talking much about issues, they're trying to turn off independent voters. Independent voters who are not necessarily enamored of Democrats, they don't really like Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
But they like the Republicans less this cycle.
Right.
So let's say they hate Republicans and kind of dislike Democrats. So it's going to be fairly easy for the Republicans to get them to not vote. And that's what they're trying to do. So they're putting all these really repulsive ads up so that these people will just say, fuck this. I mean, I can say it.
Yes, you can.
Fuck this. I'm just not going to vote.
Right.
And that's the goal.
Mm.
Just get these people to not vote.
Wow. And they like that because when the turnout is low, the Republicans do better. When the turnout is high, the Democrats do better.
Right. Well, you know, there definitely have been times when the independent vote has gone to Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, is when Republicans want them to vote. But right now, it's the opposite. Right now, the independent vote is going overwhelmingly for Democrats. So Republicans are trying to get them to not vote, and that's the basis of all these really repulsive negative ads. And you know, they don't expect necessarily
someone to believe that Jared Golden is unfit to be in office because he has tattoos, or that Beto O'Rourke mm-hmm. is unfit to be in office because he was in a punk rock band,
right.
or that Kara Eastman in Omaha is unfit to be in office because she was in a punk rock band when she was in college. I mean, they don't really expect that. They just want people to feel that, you know, this is ooky and I don't want to have anything to do with it. I'm staying home.
Right. I hear you. Well, and you know, one of the stupidest things that always bugs me is when I hear on the news or, you know, some cable news show, this election is all going to come down to turnout. It always comes yeah. down to turnout. It's who gets the most votes, who gets the most people to show up. I just thought that was it's a ridiculous thing that they feel like they have to keep pointing out, but it always comes down to turnout. The party that turns their people out to vote is going to win. Howie Klein, you have another piece up that I didn't even realize there was a special election in Texas Tuesday night for a state Senate seat. Yeah.
It wasn't. It was an ex-congressman who was running for the state Senate, but it was really, really important because the Republicans are trying to have a supermajority. They don't need any Democrats
right.
at all to bring legislation up.
Yeah.
And they are succeeding at getting that. And this was the final race that they needed to get their supermajority.
Yep. Yeah.
And the Democrats didn't really think they had a problem here. The seat has been in Democratic hands for 139 years.
Oh,
139
my God.
Years. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
The district is a D+12. I mean, that's like a Republican can't win a D+12 district. It's impossible. But they just did. So why? And the reason is simple. They had a really, really terrible candidate. Now, let me give you a tiny bit of background. The state senator who had this district for a long time, I don't know if he's in jail yet, but he's about to be in jail, on corruption charges. So here they have a corrupt conservative Democrat in the seat. He is forced to resign because he was convicted of all these different charges of corruption. And then what happens? Then the Democrats put up this guy who is just as corrupt, just as conservative, and was already rejected by this district. He was in Congress, and he was defeated when he was in Congress, for the same reason that the seat was empty, corrupt conservative. So they put him up. And he managed to lose a D+12 district that's been in Democratic hands for 139 years. Obviously this is not a DCCC situation, mm-hmm. except that this candidate is a DCCC guy. And this is the kind of candidate they look for. This is the kind of candidate they think, oh, this is what the voters want. They want these nice conservatives. And we want, of course, you know, the Democratic leadership wants. It's not that they want conservatives necessarily, although I think they do, but what they want is people who are willing to, quote, play ball. In other words, sit back, line your pockets, and leave the policymaking to us. As soon as someone smacks of kind of independence,
mm-hmm.
Independent thinking, someone who wants to do what they want to do in Congress and not necessarily follow the leadership, they flip out. That's not what they want. Those are not the kind of candidates they want. And you we're seeing it now where all of the worst Democratic candidates are the ones that are getting the big amounts of money being spent on them. I mean, the DCCC is starting already where, you know, the people who have shown that they're just going to let the Democratic leadership do whatever they want,
mm-hmm.
they're the ones that are getting the big expenditures in their districts.
Amazing.
Whereas the ones who are showing a little bit of independent spirit, the DCCC is just ignoring them. They're not giving them money. Even if they're on the red to blue page, they're still not spending on them. And when I'm asking, you know, I'll ask, some conservative jerk, is the D-Trip spending? They put $3 million into my campaign already.
Wow.
And then you ask somebody who's an independent, and I said, you know, I said to her, so has the DCCC spent any money on your campaign yet? And she says, no, not yet.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That sucks.
So that's how they play their game. That's their ball game.
So this
and they've
has
got
to...
a lot of money to spend because people don't understand that you shouldn't give to the DCCC ever.
Right.
You should only give directly to the candidates and let the candidates spend. I mean, that's why I was so happy about all this money that came in today. This is not money that's coming to Blue America as a PAC. It's not money going to us. It's money going, and it doesn't even really go through us. It's just our page, and the money goes directly to the candidate. It's not like the money comes to me and I give it to the candidates. The money is going directly to the candidates, period.
Yeah,
we're about to launch this new page this weekend, which is a page of candidates who are going to, as soon as they get to Congress in January, are going to sign on as co-sponsors of the Medicare for All bill.
Awesome.
So even if someone says they support Medicare for All, but they don't want to say that they're going to co-sponsor the bill, they're not on the page. Only candidates who have committed to being co-sponsors of Medicare for All, only those people are going to be on that page. And, you know, again, that money is going to go right to those candidates. And I noticed some big Washington fancy PAC today, I can't even remember the name of it, they sent a bill doing something similar, but theirs was different because it said, send the money to us, and we'll support these candidates.
Uh-huh.
You know, what does that mean?
Right.
You know, and what percentage of that money gets shaved off and goes into their pockets? I mean, half?
Mm-hmm.
Three quarters? I don't know.
Right.
No one knows.
And that's the problem with a lot of these groups that do this, that are PACs. This is what sets Blue America apart. And I want to take a moment and, you know, expand on this because you did mention you put up a page, all of your stuff. There's not like a Blue America website that takes in the money and then distributes it to the candidates. You set up, Act Blue, pages for Blue America giving to these candidates. So it'll have the Blue America on there, but the money goes directly to the candidates. You and Digby and John Amato, you guys don't take a draw or a cut of anything that comes in. All the money raised for candidates goes directly to the candidates.
Every penny of it. We take nothing.
Right. And that's something that needs to be said every now and then because that's not how most of these PACs work.
No, almost none of them. And they, you know, they have their reasons for why they're doing it, and sometimes they're very defensible. Like they might say, well, we're trying to help the cause, and, you know, people can't do this for free, and we have to, we have to pay them. Okay,
right.
You know, I'm not
gotcha.
Disputing that. Mm-hmm. It's just not the way that we're doing it. We're just doing it a different way. You may hear me. Can you tell by my voice that I'm doing something else while we're talking?
Yes.
I'm killing flies.
Oh.
I am not killing flies. I am pushing flies out the window.
Oh, how funny.
And it's somewhat strenuous.
people in the chat room were wondering what you were doing. There are
a couple. Oh, that's funny. I'm running from window to window and pushing. I don't know how all these flies got in my house, but they're all over the place, and I'm trying to get them out.
Oh, that's funny.
And they want to go out, but they're really stupid.
They don't know.
You know,
how
even
fly
though I'll have a door or a window open, they don't fly out. So I'm trying to push them in that direction.
So that answers Truman Town's question, who says, "What is he working on his car?" So that would be a no.
It does sound like that, but no. I mean, right? Oh, I just got one to fly out.
Awesome!
I'm so happy.
Oh. Yeah, in L.A., you can keep windows open. See, I'm thinking, what is open? In Florida this time of the year, you rush to close windows and doors very quickly so you don't let the air conditioning out. This is Florida.
Yeah, lucky.
Yeah, well, Florida, you need it. All right, one more story that I guess you have going up maybe today at Down with Tyranny. Someone please get Senor Trumpanzi a hanky. President Dump has a sad over Jeff Sessions, huh, and the lack of a border wall, and he's sad for Kavanaugh. He's very sad. The Washington Post had a story today that he's afraid that he's unprotected.
Unprotected, yes. When I send you that kind of stuff, those advanced things,
mm-hmm.
can you see the pictures in them as well?
Yeah.
Do they come through the email?
Yep.
Oh, good. So, I mean, I really like that one of him curled up
on
in a ball
desk.
On his desk in the Oval Office.
Excellent.
And, you know, the thing is, this guy should be called the victim in chief. Everything is about him, and everything in his mind, he is the most, you know, victimized person in the country. You know, how, I mean, he just goes on and on about how badly treated he is by Jeff Sessions and how awful it is. And you know, I mean, at this point, there is absolutely no doubt that he's going to fire Sessions. The Republicans yep. have convinced him to wait until after the midterms. But literally, in the first week after the midterm, Sessions is going to be gone.
Yeah.
And Hillary Clinton, I think, was right when she predicted a day or two ago that he's just going to fire everybody in sight. He'll fire them all. I mean, the Republican situation is likely to be so bad after the midterms that he couldn't possibly blame himself, even though it is his fault. He is going to look for scapegoats, and uh-huh. it will be, you know, people in his cabinet, people on his staff, the white, you know, people who work in the White House. He's going to just fire people willy nilly.
Why
this is it's the most disastrous president we've ever had?
The most what president?
I hate to even call him a president.
You said he's the most what president we've ever had?
Disastrous president we've ever had.
Yes.
Dysfunction reigns, chaos reigns, and, you know, I just feel like we're in such a precarious situation. You know, the other countries are all laughing at us now.
Yeah.
This imbecile, you know, suggested to the Spanish government, to the foreign minister of Spain, that Spain build a wall across the Sahara. The Sahara, 3,000 miles of desert, and to build a wall. I mean, this is completely crazy.
Oh, my God.
Across the Sahara Desert, it's insane. I mean, and then he says to them, well, it couldn't be bigger than our border with Mexico. Well, what do you mean it couldn't be bigger? It is bigger. I mean, it's not a matter of argument. You know, one is 1,900 miles long, and the other is 3,000 uh-huh. miles long. 3,000 miles is bigger than 1,900. Yes, it's bigger. You're wrong. He's insane. I mean, and what does Spain have to do with it? I mean, Spain used to have a little colony on the west end of the Sahara Desert, you know, Spanish Sahara, which they don't have anymore. It's a disputed area, but they're not part of this dispute. And they had a little tiny enclave called Ifni, which I've been to, uh-huh. which is not which is at the edge of the Sahara. It's part of Morocco now. And yet Spain should build a wall. Spain has been trying to finish a freeway from the city, Madrid, to the airport, like a modern freeway instead of like just a road. I mean, if you're at the airport and you rent a car and you want to drive into Madrid, mm-hmm. you're not even on a highway, you know, a modern highway. You're on a road. And if they're trying to build this freeway, and they've been trying to build a freeway, which isn't that far, for, I don't know, like over a decade, way over a decade, and they still can't do it, and it's bankrupt, and it's sitting there, a half-built freeway. And he's telling them they should build the biggest man-made thing in the history of the world. He's telling them to go build it for some ineffective wall that isn't going to do any good anyway, and that's going to cost more than anything has ever cost that's ever been done by man.
Of course.
I is crazy. You know that.
I know that. I think the world knows it.
Yes.
Yeah. And I just wonder what, you know, how they have the foreign leaders come and meet with Trump in the Oval Office, and then they do the two and two. You know, just recently it was the president of Poland. I often wonder what's going through the heads of these other world leaders when they're standing there next to this doofus. He's a guy who has no clue how things work.
And they're all prepared, and he's not mm-hmm. prepared.
Yeah.
So whatever they're going to talk about, they know what it's going to be. They know the talking points. Their staff has prepared them. An idiot is not prepared. He thinks he can wing it.
Yes. Oh, he can wing everything. Right.
They all laugh at him.
Yeah, I'm sure. And we've got another two. I mean, this is why it is so imperative that people get out and vote in the general elections. I mean, we know that Democrats have a track record of not really turning out during the midterms, but all indications show that things will be different this year.
Yeah. I mean, if you just look at the results of the primaries that have already taken place,
yeah.
it's not 100%, but just generally speaking, in overall terms, many more Democrats have turned out than Republicans to vote, and that's in the primaries. So you can imagine what it's going to be in the general election. One of the things that I love is that all these Republicans who watch Fox think that there's no way that the Republicans are going to lose, so they're not planning to vote because it doesn't matter because, you know, the Democrats can't do anything anyway. So I love that, and the Republicans are panicking over that now.
Yeah, Trump is telling them there's going to be a red wave because
red wave.
Let him keep saying it.
And to get across is that there's no blue wave because no one gives a shit about the Democrats. What there is an anti-red wave,
yes.
An anti-red wave. So that's really what the wave is. The wave will be big, the wave will be strong, but it's going to be wrong. But not that that's going to stop anyone from doing it. It's going to be wrong to call it a blue wave. It's an anti-red wave.
Okay. I will change the vernacular there because that does make more sense. Howie Klein, find him at downwithtyranny.com and, of course, the Blue America PAC. I'll have links to both on my blog at NicoleSandler.com along with the podcast of today's show. It is always a pleasure, Howie. I'm so glad you're feeling better. You sound happy. And getting money into these candidates is a good reason why. So I'm glad you made their day.
I mean, so many of them have, you know, sent me emails today thanking me and saying they can take a few minutes off from their call time.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Howie. We'll talk next week.